following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and I'm going solo today because my co-host didn't show up. He must be melting somewhere in Brooklyn, and he hasn't been able to rejuvenate. We have my producer, engineer, Jack Inslee, with me today.
Hello.
And we have a new guy in the studio, Carlos. He's going to help Jack and me run this great show today. We broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5, and if you can't listen in live, you can access all our episodes. They're archived on the website, or you can download a free podcast from the website. So there's no reason why you shouldn't be listening all the time, anytime. Call in during the show. We'd love to hear from you. The phone number you can call us at is 718-497-2128. That's 497-2128. Jack will take your call, and we'll discuss it with you on whatever your questions are. Or you can email info@heritageradionetwork.com. Today's show is the lowdown on bankruptcy, and we have a very special guest today. We have Paul Hollander from Staten Island, New York. Hey, Paul, are you on the line?
I am, Joanne. Nice to talk to you.
And you too, Paul. Great to talk to you. So Paul is an esteemed bankruptcy attorney in the New York City area. Esteemed. You like that, Paul?
I never heard that before.
Wow. Now, here's a first. Paul, you are considered a board-certified bankruptcy attorney.
That's correct.
Board-certified sounds like a surgeon. So tell us a little bit what makes you above and beyond an ordinary attorney.
Well, you know, they say if you expect a doctor to be board-certified, you should expect the same thing from your lawyer.
Uh-huh.
I took, in 1993, many years after I graduated from law school, I took special bar exams in both consumer bankruptcy law and in business bankruptcy law that I've maintained ever since then, and it requires annual recertification, continuing legal education, maintaining high standards, and being approved by my peers and appearing frequently in the courts. So, I specialize in bankruptcy law.
So is that pretty much what you do all day, every day, is bankruptcies?
Yes.
Yeah.
And every case has its own story.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. So, okay, so Paul's going to explain to us, you know, a lot of people get really nervous when it comes to considering bankruptcy, not even the act of bankruptcy, just considering it. You know, it's a scary place for a lot of people to go. And you're going to explain to us today the various nuances of go into bankruptcy court, filing, not filing, who's a good candidate, who's not a good candidate. But there are a couple of little elementary things that we need to take care of. There are a couple of different kinds of bankruptcies. Let's talk about personal bankruptcy today, because corporate bankruptcy is a whole different Megillah, right?
Right.
So our listeners, we're going to talk personal bankruptcies today. Anybody who's an individual not involved in a company is going to get the info. So what's the story with the various bankruptcies for a person?
Okay. There's essentially two ordinary chapters that we use in bankruptcy. People have heard these terms, I'm sure. Chapter 7 and Chapter 13.
Right.
Chapter 7 is your ordinary bankruptcy, where you don't pay your creditors. Chapter 13 is a court-supervised payment plan.
Well, wouldn't we automatically want to go to 7?
Sometimes we do, but a good bankruptcy interview will discover reasons why you have risk when you file Chapter 7. For instance, you may have too much equity in your home, and if you filed bankruptcy,
right,
the bankruptcy trustee would sell your house to pay your credit cards.
Oh, but we always heard that, you know, your house is safe. So explain to us why, when your house is safe and when your house isn't safe.
Your house is safe. You have to measure this, one, safe from whom? From the bankruptcy trustee, and two, from the mortgage holder. The bankruptcy trustee has the right to sell your house if there's too much equity in it, but in New York State, you're entitled to an exemption, which is now up to $150,000 per person. So let's assume you have a house with a mortgage balance, and it has $300,000 of equity on it,
right,
on top of the mortgage.
Gotcha.
And it's owned by two people.
Gotcha.
Even if only one person files for bankruptcy,
oh,
you
see,
still have $300,000
uh-huh.
of protection, of a cushion.
Okay.
If the house is worth less than $300,000 more than the mortgage balance, then your house is safe.
Okay, let me do an example. So if you have a house that's $500,000, it's
yeah.
worth $500,000, you owe $350,000 on it, the equity is $150,000, you're safe, single or joint person,
correct.
One or two people, you're
correct.
Safe. Okay, so a lot of people, because people who are in bankruptcy often don't have a lot of equity in
now,
their homes.
Now, Joanne, you have to remember, people don't realize that home equity lines of credit or home equity loans are mortgages.
Right, so they get added to the
pot. So they get added, you take the first mortgage,
right.
you take your home equity
right.
line,
right.
and supposing you have an IRS tax lien,
okay.
you take that too.
Oh,
all
now
the
you,
liens on your house.
Oh, the IRS
get added
lien,
up,
right. okay.
and then you get your exemption on top of that.
Gotcha.
A lien is a judgment that has been filed in the county clerk's office, even if it started out at the civil court or in a different state.
Okay. So there are certain types where judgments go and become secured by their real by your real estate.
Yes.
Such
now,
as an IRS tax lien.
What's interesting is
yeah.
that it's sometimes possible to use bankruptcy to take judgments off your house.
Yeah, I've had clients come in and they can get their taxes dismissed through bankruptcy. Right? There are certain times.
Certain types
right.
of taxes.
Right. But not personal taxes? Yes, personal taxes, yes.
Personal income taxes
yes.
can be discharged
right.
in bankruptcy.
Right.
It's a complicated
right.
formula,
I know
but it works
complicated.
Something like this.
Okay.
If the tax was last due more than 3 years ago, including any extensions, and the tax return was actually filed for that time period
yeah.
more than 2 years ago,
right.
then you're eligible to discharge the tax.
Okay.
Unless you've tried to bargain with the IRS in between, and that may give them an extra period of time to have it non-dischargeable.
Okay, so mostly it's older taxes, not the tax return you just filed April 15th. You can't
That's
afford
correct.
To pay it. You can't
but
go bankrupt. Right.
Now, there's something that your listeners need to remember. There are times that people don't pay their income taxes because they don't have the money.
Oh, no. Not my listeners.
Right. It's okay not to pay the taxes, but it's not okay not to file the
right,
returns.
Right, you got to file the returns. I
because
tell them all the time.
Because if you file
right.
the returns,
right.
you start the clock running, and
correct.
Then you will be eligible
right, in two
for
or three
the bankruptcy
years.
Eventually
right.
if your situation does not improve.
Right, right. Okay, Paul, let's go back to who comes into your office looking to file bankruptcies. What kind of people? What's
well,
their story?
Okay.
The average person.
The average person comes into my office and can't look me in the eye. They're so embarrassed.
Oh, right.
Because they think that nobody like them comes to a bankruptcy lawyer.
Right.
I usually have people looking and saying, I can't believe I'm sitting here.
Oh.
The truth is, all of my clients are nice middle-class people
yeah.
who have had something happen
right.
that they didn't expect and didn't cause.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing is, it has affected their self-esteem that
yeah.
they can't pay their bills.
Right.
Typically, it's somebody in the construction field that now that there's not that much construction
right.
activity
they,
in
yeah,
New
they
York,
mm-hmm.
they can't get work.
Right.
I've seen crying men in my office
right.
because they can't support their family.
Right, right.
And what I explain to them is what happens to them is usually a product of outside forces, the general economy,
right.
and is not a reflection on themselves as people.
Right, right.
Now, I have represented people. My office is in Staten Island. We also have an office in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And I have represented people from neighborhoods that they would think nobody ever would come to see a bankruptcy lawyer.
You mean rich neighborhoods?
Rich neighborhoods.
Yeah. Well, they get jammed up, too.
And what I do is, as I'm talking to them, I type in the street name on my computer of the people who've come in to see me.
Yeah.
And last night, I had people come to see me from a very nice neighborhood in Staten Island.
Yes.
And I typed the name of their street in.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not going to tell you the names.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that 7 of your neighbors have been to see me already.
Oh, boy.
And there's some streets that I represent 20 people on the same street.
Right, right, right.
So neighborhood-wise, it's every neighborhood.
Right, right.
Profession-wise, I've represented teachers, contractors, small business owners.
Right.
I've represented everyone that works for the MTA, from the people that clean the tracks to the people that install the tracks to the people that run the subways.
Well, you know, that the employees take after the employer. They're so financially inept. So they get the, it dribbles down. How's that?
I don't believe that.
I'm teasing.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
The reality is I represent policemen, firemen, sanitation men.
Right. So what's their story? I mean, it's tough times economically, no doubt. So you must see a spike at this point for the past 2 or 3 years of bankruptcies because of the economy.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because the truth is, everyone wants to pay their bills.
But what about the guys who, the municipal workers that have a set salary? Their salaries remain set. What happened? Why do these people have bankruptcy issues?
That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is people try to be self-sufficient. So what do? They work overtime.
Oh.
And they support the family on overtime.
Right. So they're living beyond their ordinary
means. There's
no more overtime. Right, right. They live beyond their means.
That's one problem.
Yeah.
A second problem is they go and they borrow against their annuities, their 401ks, and the like.
Right.
And they do it because they can't make ends meet.
Right.
But the saddest thing, this is really the saddest thing, because if they don't have enough money to pay their general living expenses, and they take an annuity loan out.
Yeah.
Next month, they have to start to pay back the annuity loan.
Right.
And they have less money to pay their regular living expenses.
Right, right, right.
Now, I will tell you that in general, for a generation or two, people in the United States have been living above their means.
Oh, sure.
Counting on the upswing in the economy.
Right.
And there was a time, as you remember, that people were told, your home is your bank.
Yeah, right, the
ATM.
Take
your money out.
Right, right, right.
But
nobody
said you have to pay it back.
Right, right.
And the way it usually worked for about 10 years is you'd refinance every 2 or 3 years, pay off your old credit cards, and then start again.
Yeah, that's a bad way to
live. The problem is the house of cards fell down.
Sure,
and
sure.
When people can't borrow against their house, they start borrowing against their pensions, and that's when it becomes dangerous. And what makes it particularly sad is you can file bankruptcy and protect all of your pensions, 401ks, annuities, 403Bs. It's all protected.
So people
take that money out unnecessarily, and by the time they come to see me, they have less money to pay their living expenses because of all the annuity loans.
And they have to pay tax on a lot of that pension stuff.
And they have to pay tax if they don't repay it.
Right. So, Paul, do you find commonly that people come to see you and it's way too late? Not too late, but they've done so much damage that they could have stopped some of the bleeding prior?
Yes.
Yeah.
And what's sad is because they're all good people. They want to pay their bills, and they're hoping that this is just a temporary problem.
Yeah.
But it becomes not temporary after a while.
At what point do you recommend someone coming to see you?
What's the ideal time?
You know, so they don't get in that place where they're, well beyond. They're taking loans out on their pensions and things like that. Like, how much credit card debt?
What do you recommend people?
Well, I would say if you find that you're having trouble making your minimum payments every month, that's the easiest thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you start charging food, that's really...
Yeah, that's a bad sign. That's a bad sign.
Because what happens is people put all their money in their bank accounts. A lot of people do internet banking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they pay all their minimum payments, and they pay their mortgage, and they pay their car payments.
There's nothing
left. And then they go to the store, they have no money in their
pocket.
That's right.
That's right. Right.
So, and the sad thing is that I have a lot of elderly people now.
Oh.
This is something new.
Oh.
I have people on Social Security. I have people 70 and 80 years old to come into me.
That's terrible.
Their children find out that their parents have been living on their credit cards,
uh-huh.
and now they have income of $2,000 a month,
right?
And they have $500 a month minimum payments on their credit cards.
Oh, boy.
And they can't afford it.
Well, we talked about reverse mortgages last week. But you know what? We're going to take a break for a minute, Paul, and we got lots more questions and you have lots more information to share. So hang on for a minute. Great. We'll be back, okay?
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Sunday at 4:30 p.m., tune in to Burning Down the House. Architecture is the laser focus of Burning Down the House, a weekly discourse on all things built, destroyed, admired, and despised. Each week, Curtis B. Wayne, your host, invites a posse of authors, critics, builders, designers, and other architecture fiends to reflect on various topics related to perhaps the most functional of all art forms. Again, that's every Sunday at 4:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we're back. Flash Talks Cash. Andrew's in the house.
Paul, I have a question for you.
Paul Hollander is on the line.
Paul?
Yes.
Do you think that a lot of the people that are coming to you were giving or extended far more, at least credit card like limits, than they should have been in the first place?
Absolutely.
So is that like part of the problem that's leading up to this?
We're dealt with a society where banks are driven the economy. They sell things that people can't pay back.
Mm-hmm.
And people have come to expect that credit cards are the same as savings accounts, and they're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, are there serial bankruptcy customers? They just run it up, they bankrupt, they run it up, they bankrupt. Is that a part of your practice?
I will tell you, Joanne, that's part of the myth that was used to create the 2005 bankruptcy amendment.
Yes.
The answer is I often have people come back to me to file bankruptcy, but they're not serial filers. They're people who have experienced different problems at a different time in their life that had no relationship to the first problem, and it was not intentional.
Right.
But there are not people who run up their credit cards and then do it again. That's a different situation. It may be because of a failed business venture.
Mm-hmm.
It may be somebody moved out of town, had a problem, lost a job,
and
came back.
Right.
So I have repeat business. I have family members send friends back. Although, I'll tell you a funny story. I had one situation. I represented a nurse. And there's a limit. It used to be 4 years, then it was 6 years, now it's 8 years before you can file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy a second time.
Oh.
And she came back to me, having filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, but it was only, I think, 6 years or 7 years later.
Yeah.
And she was making $90,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
which is probably too high to qualify for bankruptcy, and we can talk about that in a minute.
Yes.
And we had to file a Chapter 13 bankruptcy instead.
Uh-huh.
And we went to meet the bankruptcy trustee in court, who was a woman, and she said to my client, and it was a different trustee than the last time, she said, well, what happened that made you file again? And the answer was really classic American.
Uh-huh.
Well, my children, my grandchildren needed help. It was Christmas. I just tried to help them all. And so the bankruptcy trustee said, listen, the next time you go over, bring food.
Yeah. Isn't that something that people think that they have to go into whatever dire straits for their kids, for their families? It's kind of nuts sometimes.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very sad. You know, they believe that it's their responsibility to take care of, to take care of the kids all the way to their grave. They have to leave an inheritance and everything. It's not a normal way to live.
Joanne, don't let that get blown out of proportion.
I see it all the time. People are leaving. They're so worried about leaving an inheritance that they forget to live their own lives. Older people do it all the time, Paul. I tell them to go spend your money.
These people are overspending. This is a different story.
Yes, I am.
This is the other side of the situation here, folks.
All right. Well, okay. So let's go back to the people that come to see you. So most of them are decent, hardworking people.
Usually they come to see me because of an event that happened.
Right. So now what can they protect? You said they could protect their houses. They could protect their IRAs. Anything else stay intact? And what are they going to lose? What are they going to keep and what are they losing?
Okay. You can keep $300,000 for a couple of equity in a house.
Yes.
You can keep your 401k in annuity.
Yes.
You can keep tools, a couple of thousand dollars worth of tools. They just raised the exemptions in New York.
Tools mean like construction tools, those tools?
Tools of a trade.
A computer and some technology, is that considered tools?
Computers considered household property
these days.
You can keep $5,000 of household property. You can keep $5,000 of cash if you don't have a house. Cash meaning cash, savings account, checking account, bonds.
Aren't most people who are bankrupt don't have any cash left?
Well, I think you start saving up then.
Middle class people have a very strong feeling they need to have a cushion.
Yeah.
A cushion in the bank. And that cushion could be used to replace a hot water heater, fix something in the house.
Yeah.
And different people with different lifestyles have different idea about what their cushion needs to be. But cash also includes tax refunds.
Oh, yeah.
You can keep, supposing you have a personal injury case, you can keep $7,500 of proceeds after your lawyer gets paid, and the rest of the money goes to pay your credit card.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, people try to manipulate it all the time. Paul, how do you get paid when people are broke and they can't pay you? How do you manage that?
You know, most bankruptcy lawyers have a very simple philosophy. All they do is one thing. They file bankruptcy for people, and they never expect to see the same people again in their life.
Right.
So they try to get as much money as they can in the beginning.
Right.
And
because
people
don't
have a lot of money to give a lawyer.
Right. Why would a lawyer go into the bankruptcy field? There's not a lot of money, it feels like.
Well, you've asked me two questions. So the first question is, how do I deal with it? And the answer is, I get a small amount of money to get started.
Yeah.
Every case is different.
Yeah.
I just ask for a minimal amount so that people can get the credit card stopped calling by saying, I have a lawyer, and then we take a little bit more when they come in for their first appointment.
I see.
And I work out a monthly payment schedule with people.
Okay, good.
And every case is different.
Right.
That's the answer.
Right.
And why people would go into this field, I actually got into it by accident.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy what I do, even though people say to me, how can you deal with this? People coming in with all these problems every day.
Right.
I feel like a doctor.
You feel like you're helping them.
And I feel like I'm helping them.
Right.
Everyone comes in completely overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah.
And it causes family problems.
Yeah.
And what I do is I develop a strategy, and then they implement it, and they start to feel better after they've had a chance to talk to me.
Right. Hey, Paul, what about an alternative to bankruptcy, such as debt consolidation and debt settlement? Do you do that? Can you tell us a little bit about the differences between all those?
Yes. I generally don't recommend them.
Okay.
There is one situation where I do recommend them, and that's where someone I determine should not file for bankruptcy. Typically, there are people that have income off the books and no other income. When you file bankruptcy, you have to be honest with the court.
Right.
And if I don't want to create a situation where I'm disclosing that people have expenses, but their tax returns show they don't have their income.
Yeah.
So those are the people that I say should consider debt settlement programs.
They're not a good candidate for the judge and the trustee. Yeah.
The thing that you have to remember about debt settlement is that when you don't pay back an obligation, you get a 1099 at the end of the year from the company that you owe the money to, saying that we're taking a write-off on this, and you have to pick up the income.
It's called forgiveness of debt, right?
That's correct.
Yes, and you pay tax on
that. And actually, the rationale for it makes sense. If people pay their bills, you have to earn money and pay income taxes on it in order to pay the bills.
Right.
So if you get away with not paying the bills, then the government treats that the same way as if you earn the money, and then you have to pay income tax on what you don't have to pay to pay your bills.
Yeah, but I see the other side of it. They come in and they don't have two nickels to rub together, and all of a sudden they got $56,000 of income they have to pay tax on. It's kind of nutty on my side of the
fence. It is. Well,
on my side
of the fence. There's two solutions. As you know, there's something called the insolvency exception to Section 108 of the Internal Revenue Code, which allows you to not report, to not recognize the income, even though you have to report it because you got the 1099, you have to explain it.
Yeah.
But you attach a form to your tax return that says, at the time that I received this, I was insolvent. Here's proof of it.
Yeah.
And to the extent of the insolvency, you don't have to recognize the income.
So the insolvency would be the discharge from the bankruptcy?
No. Insolvency is non-bankruptcy insolvency.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
But if you file bankruptcy, that alone is a complete excuse to not have to pay the income tax.
I see.
You pick it up as... you recognize it as income, but then you exclude it because it comes within the bankruptcy exception.
Right, right.
And also, let's assume that you have a reduction in principal on your home mortgage. You can take, you don't have to pay that as income because it's your personal residence. There's a special law
rule
with regard to
right,
that.
Right, right, right. So that means if you're underwater and they modify your mortgage, instead of owing $300,000, they modify it and they say you owe $200,000. You don't have to pay the tax on the $100,000 modification, right?
That's correct. If it's the mortgage on the house that you're living in, not
correct.
An investment property.
Correct, correct. So they don't have that forgiveness of debt. So the debt settlement and debt consolidation, they're kind of similar.
Well, the debt settlement, they try to get a discount. The debt consolidation is a payment plan,
right.
But there are several risks to these companies. Usually, they're not in the same state where they advertise. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, why would someone do business in New York if they're not here?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer that often comes to my mind is because nobody can do anything to them if they do anything wrong.
Oh, because everything's dictated by state law, is that right?
Yeah, let's face it, you're going to sue somebody in California? How are you going to do
it's
that?
It's going to be hard to do
Are you going to report it to the California Attorney General's office?
Right. And then you go to court there,
Yes.
No, it's hard,
And what happens is the people disappear. They may not be lawyers that are regulated by state government, you know.
Right. So a lot of those debt consolidation, debt settlement are not attorneys.
And on top of it, one of the biggest problems is they often lead people to believe that they can control all the people's problems. But the truth is, it's all voluntary. The credit cards don't have to participate.
Right.
And they sue you anyhow because they're only settling one debt at a time. If you pay $300 a month into a fund and they take 20% of it, whatever's left is available to settle your credit card.
Right.
Well, if you have $50,000 worth of credit cards and they're saving up for one credit card settlement at a time, it'll take years.
Right.
And credit card companies get impatient.
Mm-hmm.
They call you up. They call your neighbors. They call your relatives.
Your employer.
They have a way of finding that information out and embarrass you.
Right, right.
And they sue you and freeze your bank accounts, too.
And they're also they're not cheap, are they? These services.
That's very good, because the truth is a experienced bankruptcy lawyer can help you oftentimes for less price than these debt settlement companies.
Can you give us a range of the average or the beginning point for a bankruptcy that a lawyer would charge? And, you know, I know it goes up because it gets more complicated, but can you give a range? Because I have no idea how much it bangs. Does it cost $5,000 to do bankruptcy? Does it cost $25,000? What's a typical bankruptcy fee cost these days?
Well, you know, if you go in and you go to an accountant and you go to an agency that does accountants, that does tax work, and if you go to a CPA, there are different rates based upon
who's
the quality of work
of
and the amount of effort that goes into each case.
Right.
And the other thing is, when somebody goes to a CPA to get their taxes done, the IRS is less likely to audit that file than they would if they go to someone who's not a CPA, because they know the CPA has a license to protect and a reputation and standards to meet.
Right.
So the CPA has the job of taking a first look to make sure somebody is filing an accurate tax return.
Right.
And when someone goes to a highly experienced bankruptcy lawyer,
yep.
they will charge more than an inexperienced bankruptcy
right.
lawyer.
Right.
But the measure of what you get is not the cost,
right.
but the value.
Right.
And the value is the result.
I understand.
So to answer your question, you get what you pay for.
I know.
Wow, you're such
you
a lawyer. This is fantastic.
To
Jeez,
do bankruptcy great. For $1,000,
yeah.
and
yeah, no.
I may do bankruptcy for $3,000 or $4,000.
Right. That's
but
all
I
wanted to know.
Give everyone a customized payment
I
plan
understand.
So they can afford it.
No, I'm not speaking about you, General. I just wanted to get a range. You know, when somebody calls me and wants to know how much I charge, I say, you know, my returns start at $400 and go up, depending on how complicated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, does an average return cost $750? Yeah, an average return costs $750. Are you average? I don't know until I get to know you. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I just wanted to get a feel and give my listeners an idea of what they're looking at. So it's going to be a few thousand dollars to sit
and
down.
And by the way,
right.
when people come to see me,
yes.
I give a free consultation.
Yes.
And I tell at least 50% of the people that come to see me not to file bankruptcy.
Right. Well, that's good. So you're doing the right thing. You're not there to just make a fee. You're there to do it to really help the people.
That's what I enjoy.
Paul, so we're gonna wrap up right now. I just wanted you to tell our listeners specifically your firm, your address, your contact information. Let it out there, Paul.
Thank you, Joanne. My name is Paul Hollander, Hollender. You can find me in Google. I also have an office in Staten Island and in Brooklyn. Our Staten Island offices are at 1200 South Avenue by the Hilton Hotel near the Goethals Bridge. Our office in Brooklyn is in Bay Ridge. We can be reached at silawfirm.com on the Internet. And we're happy to help all people who have financial problems and customize solutions for each one.
Good. And a phone number, Paul?
718-442-4424.
You were great today. I'm really glad you filled us in on the lowdown on the bankruptcy. I hope that we got some good information to begin the process for some of us. Hopefully, a lot of us don't need it. But you were great. It was great information. And I want to thank you for coming on the show. And I hope to talk to you outside the show soon.
Thanks. It was fun.
Okay, good. I want to say goodbye to everybody. Talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This story comes off of Market Wire. Totally Green enters the U.S. hotel market with Orca, O-R-C-A, Green Machine, installed at the Four Seasons Hotel in Boston, Massachusetts. Totally Green Incorporated, a pioneer in organic food processing systems and compostable packaging alternatives, has installed its revolutionary Orca Green Machine at the Four Seasons Hotel in Boston. Four Seasons Hotels have implemented the Orca Green Machine to establish on-site composting of organic food waste generated by its restaurant and cuisine services. The organic composter saves the hotel tipping or disposal costs. The organic refuse produced by the hotel no longer needs to be hauled away. The Orca Green Machine composts up to 2,400 pounds of organic refuse per day into harmless, nutrient-rich gray water that can be safely put into the sanitary sewer system. The Four Seasons Hotel staff deposits any organic food waste generated throughout the hotel's guest rooms and restaurants into the composting machine. This aerobic compost process complements Four Seasons' environmental mission to support sustainability by reducing the amount of methane-producing organic material that they send to landfills. Well, kudos to the Four Seasons Hotel chain, because everybody could do that if they wanted to spend the money. I thought that was a really interesting story. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Check out a small clip of Chef Smarty Pants, a.k.a. Erica Wides, talking about radishes on her show, Why We Cook.
Those supermarket radishes were like that. They were all heat and no flavor and woody and tough, and they were always kind of beat up and buggy looking, and they looked like crap. I don't understand why they were sold, and they were in that plastic bag all sealed up for like 6 months. why buy them? We always put them into our salad growing up, and I would just pick them out. And my mom still buys them. She still buys those bags. To me, those bags of radishes are like the ultimate symbol of industrial produce. They're grown for size and for color, but they taste like balls of wood dipped in nail polish remover. I don't understand why people would eat them. So I never understood the appeal of the radish until...
Want to hear more? Tune in live to Why We Cook every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., or you can find all the old shows on our archives. Also, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Thanks for listening.